The interview you're about to hear was originally recorded for the TrackSec podcast. You can find out more about the TrackSec podcast at www.tracksec.com. Hello, podcast listeners, and welcome to the TrackSec technical segment. We've just had the Pete Wood interview, which, as you guys know, it was the one that stayed on all the way through. Very, very good interview, and once again, I'd like to thank Pete Wood for coming onto the line. Fantastic of him. What we wanted to do was talk to you guys today about, you know, kind of like an issue that's close to our heart, which is, you know, certainly for half of the hosts on the show have been involved in hacking degrees, and for the other half, well, for Chris, you've done professional qualifications. So kind of today what we wanted to do was talk about roots of getting into ethical hacking and penetration testing. And although it's not like aimed to be a definitive guide, it's really just kind of a discussion on routes that are available and what choices are for people. I mean, in the UK, a number of universities now are offering a host of degrees that aim to produce graduates with the skills required to be like effective ethical hackers and penetration testers. And I mean, like I said, we've got a list of a couple of universities in the UK that are offering hacking degrees. This is not a definitive list and is always worth you having a check about, but there's obviously Aberdeen University in Dundee, which I was at, Northumbria, which Tom was at, and Ryan Dewhurst from Down Vulnerable Web Apps at, the Sunderland, Leeds, Met and Coventry. Now, I have to be honest with people on this call, I don't know anything about the Sunderland or the Leeds Met, the Coventry one. So what we're going to quickly do is just run across a couple of the professional qualifications that are out there, and then just kind of get into a debate about, you know, the things that you can learn and the best ways of getting into it. And like I say, I mean, I've got to declare a bit of an interest in here. I sit a little bit on the fence. For most parts, I'm self-taught, but I've formally received a university education for ethical hacking. Although I didn't do my fourth year, I did 3 years. I do equate a lot of what I'm able to do now from my time at university. However, being self-taught before I got to university made it an awful lot easier. That aside, I suppose we should really start off with asking the other hosts what their views are about hacking degrees, and see if me and Tom can kind of answer some questions between us. We've got on the tech segment today, Robert Lederman wasn't able to join us, but it is Chris, John Riley and Tom. Chris, what are your views on ethical hacking degrees?
Well, I mean, it's something that I've talked previously with Ryan, who was with us on episode one, regarding the university degrees. I've always seen security qualifications as more of something you kind of grow into. It's not something that I think people can come out of school age of 16 and go, I want to work in security and go off to university and learn that for 4 or 5 years and then come out going, wow, I know everything about security. A lot of people, or at least most of the people who I know in the industry, didn't use that method of getting in and getting into ethical hacking or working in security. They moved through network support, server support, desktop support, or coming from the other direction from development, and then kind of gradually moved more towards security because it's what they wanted to do, or they got to that point in their career where it was, I've done this for so long, I want to do something new, and security was that something new for them. So, I mean, I've always seen the university degrees as the universities kind of jumping on the bandwagon, saying, yeah, sure, we can do that too. Get in an instructor who knows something about security, and then they spend 2 years learning every aspect of security, and at the end of it, they're suddenly meant to know just as much as someone who's been in the industry for 10 years. I kind of find that hard to understand, and not having gone through that university process myself, the question I have is, how deep is that knowledge? Are we creating through these university classes the CISSP of ethical hackers? the unethical hacker who has a broad knowledge but very, very thin. You know, if you speak to someone who comes from a university who does ethical hacking and say, what do you know about VoIP? What do you know about VoIP security? They could probably discuss that with you for a couple of minutes. But then if you ask them, well, what does the protocol look like? You know, do they know to that level of depth really what things look like at a protocol layer, which is what I personally think is required?
Well, I mean, the question that I would ask at that point, just, you know, would you expect a professionally certified penetration tester or ethical hacker to have that same degree of knowledge as well? I mean, you've gone through some of the professional certifications that HR departments look at. And let's pick on the certified ethical hacker. Would you expect someone who's done that course to be able to explain to you a VoIP data packet?
With CEH, it's kind of different. I mean, people know what my impressions are of CEH. You know, I've written about it previously.
I mean, I'm picking on you slightly, but I think you get my point.
I understand what you mean, but as with everything, with professional qualifications, CEH is what it is. It's a week-long course where you learn about hacking. You know, you couldn't learn everything you need to know in a week. You know, with quite a lot of other things as well, is a lot of the professional qualifications, they have to be very focused on specific areas. You get two types of professional qualifications. You either get things like the CEH, the Security Plus, things like the CISSP, which tend to be very, very broad, but very unspecific in their information. You know, you'll spend an hour discussing VoIP because you need to know the basics of it and you need to know what the security issues are, but very, very light. You probably won't do any hands-on stuff with it because the equipment's not available or the lab's not set up for it. But you'll talk about it for half an hour to an hour. Maybe you'll look at one or two tools that you could use to test the security of it, and then straight on to the next topic. And then on the other side of it, you've got people who people like the SANS Institute, who I've done a number of courses with, who take it from the other point of view, where they say, well, look, people need to know everything about this topic, and specifically talking about VoIP. They now have a 6-day VoIP security class where you go in on day one and they take it from the point of view of you know nothing about VoIP at all. You know, they take you through the pros and cons, why it's become so prevalent. They take you through the issues that it causes, the environment that it needs to be set up in, whether you're using VLANs, what the supporting infrastructure is, how what the packets look like, what SIP is, what RTP is, what the Cisco Skinny protocol looks like, you know, how these things can be exploited, how these things can be secured. But SANS do that in a very, very specific way, and in 6 days you spend a lot of time looking at their technology. But even after 6 days, you're not going to walk out as an expert. You know, I've always thought of security as more of something that you, if you go on one of these classes, when you come back, you need to really want to build on that. You need to really want to go further and look more in depth and really kind of learn more for yourself. Because if you're just expecting any class to teach you everything you need to know, then you're not going to spend long in this industry.
So why do we, in this case, expect graduates that have done 3 years at university doing just as wide a broad of subjects as well to be up to a certain level? I mean, I personally, I mean, this is not a criticism of the hacking courses, but I think it's unrealistic for us to expect graduates to be anything other than entry level in security. In Scotland it's a 4-year course because they do honours, and in England it's a 3-year course, isn't it, Tom?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we do have third year is a placement year. I don't know if you had that where you are.
But you're only doing 3 years of study.
Yeah, 3 years of studying, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no, I mean, anyone that follows us on Twitter will know that I asked the question about what professional qualifications people think takes to be the bare minimum someone needs to get into ethical hacking. And I got a mixed results back, but very few of them actually indicated any qualifications. A lot of people said that being self-taught, being passionate, being all, expecting hacking not to be a 9-to-5 job, being fully committed to it, that was a prerequisite. I mean, I've been self-taught for a lot of the stuff that I've learned, and I think it's a key asset that any ethical hacker or penetration tester needs. I mean, Tom, what are your views on the ethical? I mean, you're on an ethical hacking degree course now. What are your views on that, the hacking course?
I think the course in itself is all right. I do find that most of what I learn is from what I've self-taught myself or what I read, you know, from Twitter or from articles on the internet. I think it's fair to say what I'm getting at university is an outline of knowledge. I think what I'm learning is more the ethics, especially in my first semester. It was all ethics before they could talk to us about anything else. I mean, I'm pretty sure we're not going to be shown anything that's going to be, you know, that's going to blow my mind too much. But something that really is, it's not, I don't suppose getting on my nerves, but something that is like, that is something that I didn't expect as much is that I'm doing a lot of things that I didn't really relate to hacking as much. Like at the moment, I'm doing a lot of work on computer architecture. So how a processor works, store memory, stuff like that. That's something that I'm doing at the moment. And it's quite difficult to get my head around why I'm going to use that, but you know, I'm just plugging away. But I think my personal opinion is that the course is good, but only if you're willing to build on it. If I, like a lot of people on my course at the moment, if I literally just went to the course, did the work, and then came home and did nothing, wasn't involved in any, you know, security-related stuff outside of university, I wouldn't know half as much as I know now, and probably wouldn't have as much passion as I do for it.
This is one of the big credits that I put to going to university and doing some formal part of ethical hacking was the place of being put in an environment that promotes you to be an ethical hacker. Most people being self-taught don't have the benefit of that environment. I went to classes with other ethical hackers, and we had a lab where it was okay to be an ethical hacker. It was okay to have day-to-day people that I met every day that were doing the same things as I was, and I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that aspect very, very much. My worry is that if you take someone out of that environment where they don't have class peers to help them get through, or to bounce ideas off, or for motivation, if that, because I think if you leave university thinking that you don't have to spend any, or any qualification for that matter, professional or certified or degrees or anything like that, if you leave that qualification and don't think that you have to invest any more time in learning, then you're going to be solely disappointed, certainly in our business. So I just wonder if we have this nice, structured, warm learning environment that we then take these people used to that and put them into maybe a hostile, very fast-paced assimilation of data that they might not be so used to. Am I sounding like I'm talking rubbish there, or does that make sense?
I do agree with you completely. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest reasons why you do have a placement year, is so that you can understand exactly, you know, what the industry itself is like. I don't struggle with, but it's on my mind, is that obviously we're being taught all about hacking, and you know, we do have the labs and stuff. But you know, there are a few people on the course that think, you know, you think a few things about, and maybe, you know, wrongly, but is it right, you know, to let 18-year-olds mess about with stuff that they maybe not understand and go home on their own, you know, networks at home, mess about with it, and then, you know, suddenly it leaks out. I mean, for example, we got given source code to a Trojan. We were told how to compile it and stuff. And, you know, it was like, don't put this on the internet. But you know, there are going to be people on the course that I do believe are probably going to do that. So, you know, there's that side of the ethics as well.
Yeah, I mean, you're always going to get people who are going to abuse things that they learn, and that's whether you're in a university environment or you're paying for the class or you're learning online, you're doing things yourself in a lab and just downloading things from the web and playing around with them. There's always going to be people who are going to abuse that. So I don't think that's something that's specific to the university hacking courses. But going back to what you were saying. Oh, well.
Who's more dangerous, a chemist or a hacker? Do you know what I mean? Who can do more damage? I mean, it's irrelevant at the end of the day. I mean, a rogue chemist can be just as dangerous as a hacker. I suppose the damage a hacker can do is data. The damage a rogue chemist can do is kill someone. But, you know. But back to what you were saying, Chris. Sorry for jumping in.
Yeah, no, I mean, actually, I wanted to go back to what you were saying was about people coming out of university. And from my point of view, university really teaches people the theory of how things should work. The problem that I know I've fallen into, and I'm sure many other people have, is if you read a book about hacking, it doesn't mean you know how to hack. You know, if you read a book about hacking and you understand how everything functions, and you seem quite a lot of time to get it into your head as like, yeah, I can do that. That's not a problem. But the first time you're actually faced with actually having to do it, it's a very different thing. You know, reading about it, understanding it, and knowing what tools do what, knowing how to dissect packets in a certain way so you can gain information about a remote system or fragment packets to evade IDSs. If you understand how it works, that's the first hurdle. But then when you actually have to sit there and do it, that's a whole different thing, and it takes a different skill set to be able to translate that from understanding and reading to actually being able to do it. And there are people who can't translate that from one to the other.
They're quite lucky in the sense that some of the people on the course are just as passionate as me, you know, to do with security. And we do once every week now, we do get together and we've got, we actually set up our own lab. We've got one of the guys on our course is really into servers. He's got about 5 or 6 different servers that he's bought and built. So what we do is we get together, you know, put a few operating systems on there, mess about with, you know, some exploits that we've heard about and, you know, some things that we've seen on Twitter or on in the news and that. And we have a look at it. And obviously that, like what you're saying there, Chris, it's about, you know, learning as well as just reading. And that is probably one of the biggest things to do with the course that, you know, probably the biggest thing is that it's an ethical hacking course, but it's the ethical hacking theory and it's the ethical hacking ethic. It isn't, you know, when what we're not learning is, you know, all this stuff. I mean, all this stuff that you're saying you would expect professionals to know. Like I said, you know, like you're trying to argue is something that I don't know. So I think the biggest thing here is that, yeah, it might be good, you know, gets you socializing, I suppose, university, and
you are learning. The other thing it's probably worth me pointing out as well, Chris, is that certainly in my experience, there is a lot of hands-on practical stuff going on in ethical, you know, we have an ethical hacking, you know, there is an ethical hacking lab that's for ethical hacking students to go into at any time. They have lectures and they have lab time performing. Now, okay, maybe not state-of-the-art hacks, but I don't think for you to start understanding certain hacks, it needs to be the latest and greatest. Some of the oldest ones are probably the best at understanding principles. But I think any ethical hacking student needs to be, in my opinion, au fait with using virtualized technologies so that it can virtualize operating systems and practice. In my opinion,
yeah,
do you know
yeah.
what I mean? But it's not like an ethical hacker goes to university and they spend 15 hours a week in theory talks about ethical hacking. It's not as cut and dry as that. You know, there's a lot of practical stuff involved in it. And for me, I mean, my criticisms, and I always made them known when I was at university, was there was a lot of ancillary stuff that we did that I didn't think was particularly pertinent to ethical hacking. You know, I did a module in web standards. You know, and I failed to understand in any realm why that is relative, why that should take more. That takes half a term at Abertay doing web standards for 3 hours a week.
Now, I think that comes from universities wanting to run this kind of class, but not really knowing what they should put into it.
Mm.
And I've seen it before. I've seen it here in Austria, where it becomes very much a, we need to fill this many hours. What do we fill it with? Well, I don't know. What can you teach? Instead of what should we teach, it's what can you teach?
The three of us on this call could talk infinitely about things more important that could be filled up in that time than web standards. And that's just
But you know what I mean? This is something I do want to touch on. It's the people that teach at universities quite a lot. The people who teach at universities quite a lot don't. They're not always the people who are actually doing this for a living. You know, you do get people who go to universities and teach about ethical hacking who do it for a living. But you also get quite a lot of universities who simply expect someone to learn it so they can teach it. And I don't. I think it's just as hard for a
networking
teacher.
Lecturer. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, it's like. Read a book, teach it.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen people, no criticism here either, that you know, maybe have been a lecturer in a particular subject and was sent off to do a 5-day course that maybe we referred to earlier on, and thus were qualified to lecture first, second, and third year ethical hackers. You know, I don't think it's not my place to say if that's right or wrong, but, you know, I'm sure listeners can take out of that what they want. I mean, I think how you teach ethical hackers, for me, I mean, I've talked about this, you know, with lecturers before, and first and foremost, what they do a computer degree with a speciality on the top of it, and that's the reality of what ethical hacking degree is that in reality, it's a computing degree with a speciality in ethical hacking. I think academically how you teach ethical hackers has to be different to how you would teach, you know, Keynes Tech students or do you know what I mean? Or, you know, it's because it's reliant on mindsets and stuff like that, that either that or the entry requirement for them has to be different, that there must be some form of aptitude test as such, do you know what I mean? And I'm saying that, there's no guarantee that I would have got through that way either, so, do you know what I mean? I could be cutting my own throat with that suggestion.
I mean, going back to what you're saying about web standards, I prefer to have web standards. We did a module on writing, how to write. Literally, we got told where to put an apostrophe, and like we were saying before, the course has literally been given allocated so many hours, and they need to fill this many hours for it to be a competent course. And they thought, do that, yeah, we'll chuck in how, where to put apostrophe. Everybody on the
podcast. Yeah, I mean, for me, the other thing that for me, and, you know, I'm sure I've been shot by class peers for saying this as well, is that I don't think there's a lot of business acumen kind of being taught either, that it's easy to get all caught up on ethical hackers should be this, this, and this. But we did a law module when I first started, and they pulled the law module out of the ethical hacking degree. And for me, I think being able to read and understand non-disclosure agreements, being able to look at master service agreements and project specs, and as a professional, and being able to assimilate that information and know the boundaries and the legal requirements and so on and so forth, and not just that, but how to write a business report for, you know, and I know that maybe sounds dull and boring, but for some of us, that's the face of what we have to do in business as well. Certainly if you're going to be looking at subcontracting, you need to be able to hold yourself up against two or three businesses in that partnership. And I don't think, you know, if you were doing an accountancy degree, they might equate that you're going to be functioning in a professional business environment. I don't think the same respect is maybe given for ethical hacking, that you know, penetration testers have to work in professional environments. And that's another concern that I may have. I mean, Chris, in your time, I mean, would you say that you've had to be able to deal with a vast array of customers and clients and have a almost be professional? I know that's a strange question to ask someone, but do you get the drift of what I'm trying to ask you.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've always said that if you can't write and communicate your findings, if you can't present your findings in a way where people not only understand what you're trying to say, but also respect what you're trying to say, then there is no point in doing the test at all. I mean, I've seen presentations that are technically perfect. Everything that the person has said has been 100% technical, yet they make some key flaws. They're talking to management people, and they're talking about packet captures, and they're talking about how this reset packet was sent, and this and that. And for me, that was fine, because I'm on a technical level. I understand what the guy's saying. I really want to hear their technical level. But he just didn't take into consideration that he's talking to three management people who are just nodding and going, I have no idea what this idiot is saying. He's doing the right thing, but at the wrong time. And it's very easy to do, and it's something you have to learn. And if someone doesn't come to you and say, look, that was a great presentation, but you should do this and this and this, you really don't realize it, because you just think, well, if he's too stupid to understand, it's his fault. Problem is, if that's a client, if they're too stupid to understand, they're not going to come back to you, because they're the ones who are right. They're the client. If you present at too technical level, or you present at too not enough technical level, or your report is too technical, not technical enough, too long, too short, or as you were saying, Tom, full of punctuation and spelling mistakes, some people in management would take that as a bad sign. If you write a report and there's punctuation and there's spelling mistakes, then even though the technical people could be very happy with your work, they're not the ones who paid the bill. The ones who pay the bill is the guy further up the chain who just wants to read the management summary, and they want to read just the management summary. And quite a lot of people who I've met who do ethical hacking and pen testing, they don't know how to write a management summary. They're just, well, I just write the technical stuff.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, at the moment, what we're actually doing, one of our projects at the minute in our ethical hacking module, is we're working for a company. And doing some not information gathering. It's basically like passive testing, so seeing what we can do with the URL and if we can find FTP logs or whatever in the website, if indexing is allowed, stuff like that. And I mean, we're actually presenting that to them at the end of our findings. I think it's in April, so the company's actually coming in, and we have to dress up smart and do this presentation for them. To make sure that obviously we're learning all our skills in presentation as well. And next year, we do a module called consultancy, which is we actually team up with the business students, and we get given a fake company, and we get given roles within that company to do. So like one of the business students, like the project manager. We're like the web builder, and we have to make sure it's all secure, and at the end we have to present it to our tutors
the first section of that. I was sitting there saying, that sounds absolutely awesome, and then you got we'll do different roles, and we'll be the web designer, and it reminded me so much of a module that I had, which was called team-based problem solving. Which apparently was, another thing that ethical hackers should have, being able to work in multidisciplinary teams. And absolutely, I couldn't agree any more with that. But with it being completely lack of realism, being asked to be a web developer when you're an ethical hacker. Do you know what I mean? That the project should relate the skill sets of the people being involved. Do you know what I mean? So that was my criticism of it, but who am I to judge on these things? What I want to do is just run down a couple of the professional qualifications and see what people say, if you think that this is a good route or a good qualification to go through. Have a quick talk about them. I mean, we'll start off with, we've already touched on this one before, but the CEH, the Certified Ethical Hacker. I haven't done it. I know Chris has done it. I've heard Chris talk about it.
Did that make you blush?
My ear was sore for a couple of days.
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing we need to make perfectly clear with anything we're going to talk about here in regards to qualifications and certifications, it depends who's teaching the class. I've heard a lot of people talk about CEH very badly, and I've heard a lot of people talk about CEH and say it was very, very good. And it's very much dependent on what the teacher does, how a teacher runs the class, and what you do over and above what the CEH requires you to learn. And I would just like to say my findings with CEH and EC Council in general were on the worst side. It could well be that there's been at least one version upgrade since I took the class. Maybe they've brought it back into line, and maybe it's a bit better than it was previously. But yeah,
this is just in reality. The Certified Ethical Hacker is just really, is it not really supposed to act as kind of like a seal of approval that you have a base level of understanding, and it's not supposed to, it's not being any more than that. It's just, this person has, in our opinion, the required skill set to do ethical hacking. I don't think, it doesn't really do anything else than that, does it?
Well, when I took it, it was purely tools. You pretty much end up with huge volumes of books with screenshots on every tool that does every single thing. There's very little focus on understanding what these tools actually do in the background, and how they really function. It's purely, if you want to do this, this tool does it. If you want to do that, then use this tool. And I go in completely the other direction. Is my personal opinion has always been, and I've said it before, probably on this podcast and others, is that if you get a tool, then the first thing you should do is run Wireshark while you're running it and learn how it really works and what it's really doing. I'm one of these sad people who, if I can do it manually with, you know, using Scapy or using some other kind of things like TCP traceroute instead of Firewalk, things like that, I'd rather do it manually so that I have as much control over what I'm doing as possible. And CEH goes in the direction of, you don't need to know what it does, you just need to know how to get the results out. And that's where I disagree with what they do.
So,
I mean, going back to what you said before, Aaron, about it, you know, having basic understanding and stuff, our ethical hacking program leader, he's actually want to get a certificate put in at the end of our course, so that not only have we got the degree, but we've also got the certificate as well. And he actually doesn't want to incorporate certified ethical hacking. He wants to try and get something out of him because he says that he doesn't like it personally himself either.
Yeah, so our opinions, I mean, do we think that the CEH would help anyone trying to get into ethical hacking? I imagine the CEH is probably somewhere on some HR gateway keeper for a business. Somewhere, but do we think it's critical for getting into the business? You know, from what I've heard of it and from what certainly you two have said about it, probably not the most critical qualification to go out and get in your life.
No, I mean, it does, it holds a place, yeah, but it's not first on my list. Yeah, I think it's one of those qualifications you can probably do if you've been working in network support or any kind of highly technical discipline for 5-6 years, and you want to move from support or management. Yeah, it's really kind of a gateway. I want to move from this into security. Maybe I'll do a CEH so that I have something on my CV that says I now do security as well. But even then, it's tentative at best.
I mean, I'd never say no to a qualification that was paid for me. So, you know, if anybody wants to pay for it, I'd definitely do it. But it depends how much it costs, doesn't it? I mean, how much did you have to pay for yours, Chris?
Oh, I did a lot of training altogether, and it was all bundled together, and I can't remember how much it was now, but I mean, it's not cheap. You know, CEH, you know, depending on where you do it, could be anything between, £1,500, £2,500. It's not cheap.
Yeah.
So it isn't going to get you a lot.
Neither is 4 years at university either. I mean, 4 years at university is not particularly cheap. I mean, if you invested that sort of money into your professional career, I mean, you know, if you think about what, you know, what will you be, Tom? Maybe £20,000 in debt by the time you finish your qualification. If Chris, if you had £20,000 to put into professional certification, you'd expect a fair whack for that, actually.
Oh yeah, yeah, you would. And there's actually some universities in the UK that that are teaming with the SANS Institute. I can't remember them offhand, which ones they are, but they're actually doing university training in the UK where you will learn to the SANS curriculum, and at the end of the university you'll get a degree as well as a number of SANS certificates.
That's
what my tutor's trying to do.
Yeah, but it's very hard.
Oh yeah.
The next one that I the next one I wanted to talk about was the OSCP, the Offensive Security Certified Professional. It's basically done by the offensive security guys, and that's using that's basically kind of understanding like concepts to pen testing with Backtrack and It's a totally online qualification, I think. Am I right, Chris? It is done online, isn't it? It's not like
there's two ways where they run it. Yeah, no, they run an actual class at events like Black Hat Europe, Black Hat US, and I think they're doing a few others now as well. But I mean, a couple of times a year they do an actual hands-on class. But most of the time, this is a distance learning thing. You get obviously the software Backtrack free, so just go and download it. But you'll also get videos, flash videos, and PDF, and various. You also get kind of access to forums and email support and things like that. So it's a very much kind of do it yourself, hands off. Here's the information. Go away and learn that. And practice yourself. But at the end of it, the exam isn't your typical standard multiple choice question that most people go with. It's a 24-hour hack challenge. You have to hack a system. They give you access through VPN to a testing system, and you have to exploit the system. You know, download the hashes from the box, export, you know, crack the hashes, log into the second box, you know, and basically it's, I haven't actually gone through the exam personally, but I know some people who have, and they say it's a very, very realistic test. It's basically, if you come out having this qualification, then it's something you can say that this person can actually do what they say they can do. They can't just answer questions, they can really actually do it.
I mean, I've not done it either, but that's actually on my list of things to do. I think you said the same to me prior to the call starting as well, didn't you, Chris? That this is.
Yeah, I mean, what I like about it is, as it's a do-it-yourself thing, I think it's €500. I think it's €500, £500 for the do-it-yourself. That's a third of the cost of CEH at its cheapest, and I personally think it's at least three times more popular. However, with that said, if you go up to anyone who works for HR and say, I'm OSCP, they'll look at you blankly and go, is that anything like a CEH? Which is depressing. But you know, that's more of a, if you're in the industry and you've got that qualification, then, and if people know what it is, then it means something. But if you go to your average HR, they're not going to know what it is.
But for entry level, for getting yourself ready and you know, if you want, looking for a career in penetration testing, if you can get that it, you know, will we agree that that's at least a beginning, probably better for someone wanting to get in, you know, with that, yeah, with the HR problem, but the reality.
Yeah, I would also say, from what I know, the OSCP is not an entry level qualification. You've got to have a fair bit of experience before you start doing this. I mean, the prerequisites is you should know Windows, you should know Linux, you should be able to run standard penetration testing, ethical hacking tools before you even start doing the class. Whereas other entry level stuff says you know how to use a mouse. It's pretty much the prerequisite. So
the other one. The other one is, we see this a lot, and this is certainly not an entry-level qualification by any chance here, but the CISSP, the Certified Information System Security Professional, which is basically like almost like a de facto for certain industries involved in security. I certainly don't have one. Pete Wood, the interviewee from this episode, he's CISSP. I mean, I really absolutely know nothing about it because it just seems such a distant thing for me to be able to get. I think even if you do have an ethical hacking degree, only, you know, you need to be in the business for 5 years to get one, and you know, even if you have a degree, it's only knocking a year off that. So I'm not sure if it really should be in our list of things to talk about today, but. You know,
it should be, because you can't talk about these things without talking about CISSP. I mean, if it's not really an ethical hacking degree, and I would also say this isn't a technical degree. It isn't a technical qualification. This is a management level, an overview qualification. You'll touch on a number of subjects, and part of that would be ethical hacking and understanding, you know, some basics about it. But if you talk to a CISSP and start talking about anything highly technical, if he's able to converse with you on that technical level, it's not because he's done a CISSP. The CISSP is very much access control, policy making. There's 10 domains as far as I remember, and they're very kind of high level. Overview, very, very wide knowledge base, but very, very thin. So you can talk about a number of things, but you couldn't talk about them in depth.
It seems that's when you need to be a manager, they seem to look for that in job descriptions quite a little bit when you're dealing with high end, so, you know, when you're dealing with, yeah, when companies think that the high-end security and you know, it seems to be a de facto requirement for jobs there, and I can understand why. But as I say, I know very little about it. The next one I wanted to talk about was SANS. I really like SANS. There's no two ways about it. But SANS is not a qualification per se. It's a body that gives out accreditations, and they have lots of different courses. Chris, you've done some SANS as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been working together with SANS for a couple of years now. So SANS is actually the training body. They have the certification body is called GIAC. The difference between SANS and pretty much everyone else that we're going to talk about today is that they focus very heavily on specific areas. You know, for example, they will have, we talked about briefly before, SANS will have a course, 6-day-long class that talks about VoIP security, whereas in most other classes, CISSP, CEH, and everything else, that will be a half an hour segment of your training. So they take areas of training and really focus very, very heavily on exactly what you need to know to really test those kind of things, really secure those kind of things. And they take it from both the attack and defense standpoints. I mean, there's penetration testing, there's web application penetration testing, which they split out into a separate class. But there's also intrusion detection classes, incident handling classes, so you can spend 6 days learning about intrusion detection, how IDSs, IPSs work. And it kind of really, really dives into a very, very deep level. I mean, what I've really like about the SANS classes is that their teachers are very, very good, and they're very, very knowledgeable, because they don't have teachers who just teach. Everyone who works for SANS does that for a living. You know, if you go and you learn from someone, for example, John Strand from pool.com does the training, does a lot of training for SANS. He actually does it for a living, and then teaches about it as well. And what I really like is they can actually stand there and talk about how it really works and how it really functions and what they've come across in their jobs and while they've been doing these things, whereas quite a lot of other teachers are just, well, 3 years ago when I last actually did something other than teach, this is what I saw.
I mean, I couldn't agree more. I've always loved the stuff that I see come out of SANS. I'm not sure if you saw that come up on Twitter recently, but I'm bound to pronounce his name wrong because it's a tradition of mine. David Holitzer, or he's the SANS. He does like IT audit and stuff, but he did a webcast on curating Metasploit exploit modules step by step, and it's absolutely fantastic. And I mean, he's a teacher over at SANS as well, and I mean, the quality of the webcast that he's done is fantastic. I'll actually link to it in the show notes or something like that. Did any of you guys see that come up on Twitter?
No, I didn't.
Take that as a no.
Yeah, no, I saw it. I haven't had a chance to look at it fully, but what really interested me is I know there's a lot of people that work for SANS that do a lot of exploit writing. They actually have a 5-day class purely on writing exploits and doing security research. But what interests me was this video was so well done, and it comes from someone who teaches auditing, which is auditing for me is very much in the direction of where you don't actually need to do anything technical. You just need to know which questions to ask, which systems to verify, and it's very much a non-technical training and a non-technical role.
He's done a fantastic job on this video, to be honest with you. It's a very good job of a very good basic crash course in, you know, buffer overflows and how to explain them and how the Metasploit engine the framework, you know, how you can get them in there and stuff like that. It's a very interesting one. Anyone listening should definitely, you know, I think it's actually 4 YouTube videos all in all or something like that, but it's very, very good. So is it fair to say that you know, you could look at SANS if you want to specialize in a particular subject, like, you know, you want to do VoIP penetration testing? SANS a pretty good starting point for that then?
Yeah, I mean, they do generalistic courses as well, but the ones I'm particularly interested in, the more specialist ones. What I would say, there's some good points about SANS and there's some bad points. The good points are you can do it live. They do a variety of live training offerings. You can also do home training. You know, they do an on-demand thing where you get videos, audio, and the books. And then there's another offering that they think called VLive is the new one, where there's a live trainer doing the class, but everyone's connecting through computers. So there's a live, you do this class, you know, every Monday night for a month, for 3 hours or whatever. But there's actually a real live teacher there. On the bad side of it, SANS is not cheap. You know, you're looking at, for a 6-day class, €3,500 for a 6-day class.
They've got what's there? They've got, if they got this, am I right in thinking they've got this, not entry level, but this kind of blanket sort of, this is a web application and penetration course that they do as well, isn't it? Is that, am I thinking of the wrong people?
No, no, they have a web application penetration tester class, which I've done recently in the last year.
Is it any good?
Yeah, it was very good. It was written by Kevin Johnson from InGuardians, who's a very smart guy. And quite a lot of the SANS instructors, very approachable. If you have a question about the material, or if you find a problem with the material, you know, you find a spelling mistake, or, you know, there's something in there that's outdated or something, if you send them an email, they'll reply. You know, they're really, really trying to engage with the students, and you know, Kevin's a really friendly guy, and he really knows his stuff as well. So, and they're constantly updating. I think 4 times a year, or 3 or 4 times a year, they update their material. So it's not like some other qualifications where, well, this got written in, you know, 2004, and we're still going to teach it. You know, every couple of months it's updated.
And the other one that I wanted to ask you about as well was Security Plus as well. Did you do that?
Yeah, I did it a couple of years back. Security Plus from CompTIA, they do quite a lot of these kind of qualifications, Network Plus, A Plus, Server Plus, things like that. That's what I consider as entry level, these kind of things. Security Plus is... I equate it to the CISSP, but CISSP Lite. It's really kind of a more focused down version of a CISSP with less domains. But it really does give you kind of the base knowledge for you to know where you want to go in security. Mostly because quite a lot of people still tend to think, I see that, you know, you do computer security, you know, but people don't really realize computer security isn't just one thing. You know, you could be a penetration tester, you could be an auditor, you could be a PCI, a quality, someone who works as a QSA, you could be an IDS expert, you could do firewall configurations, you could do server hardening, you know, you could do incident handling. There's so many different facets of security. But one of the things that really ties them together is if you do the Security Plus, it really does give you a good grounding, so you really know you've got a good base to kind of grow on from that point. And you really kind of, you can focus off into more specific areas.
I mean, is there any other particular qualifications that you think people should know about on this, in line with the ones that I've mentioned?
It really depends where you want to go with it. I mean, personally, I started off, I did network and server support for 10 years. And the first thing I wanted to do was get my Microsoft qualifications, because I was so busy with work for these 10 years. I was behind the grade. You know, it was like, as Windows 2003 was coming out, I was finally finishing my Windows 2000 exams because I hadn't had a chance to do them. And it finally got to the point where it was, okay, I'm just going to go and I'm going to upgrade all my Microsoft certs. And then while I was doing that, I really started looking at the Microsoft security stuff. And people give it a bit of a bashing, the Microsoft security stuff, because it's not the best material in the world. But Microsoft stuff is so prevalent nowadays that those kind of Microsoft security classes are interesting to do, especially if you're going to be working in a Microsoft-heavy environment. I don't work as a network technician anymore, but just to be able to write in a report, we found this issue, and this is because this setting in Microsoft's DNS configuration is misconfigured, and it should be configured so and so and so. To be able to kind of add extra material to your reports and to be able to, you know, give that added benefit of not only we found a problem, go and fix it, it's we found a problem because of this and this is how you can fix it. And that's what customers are really looking for, is that helping hand with not just find where we have security issues, but they want to know how they can make it better. And some of the Microsoft qualifications really give you that level of knowledge.
Well, I believe I'll have to get the pitchfork and burn you, Chris.
Sorry. Well, on the flip side, you can also get Red Hat Certified Engineer, which is going to do the same for Linux. Does that help?
Yeah, that's more like it. Tom, I mean, is there any, I mean, what kind of, what do you think we should be looking for from graduates? What do you hope that you'll understand when you leave university from ethical hacking anyway?
I hope I understand, and what I will understand will probably be two different things. I hope to have a good knowledge in networking. I'm doing my CCNA certificate at the moment, and by the time I finish university, I will receive CCNA 4. So hopefully I really want to have a good understanding in networking, but to say ethical hacking wise, I think to be fair, most of what I'm going to learn is going to be more going to be about the, you know, the theoretical side than having any hands-on. I think as soon as I finish university, I think it's going to be the case of finding a job and trying to get some certificates which back up, what I've learned theoretically.
I mean, I suppose we should really touch on the self-taught side of it. But I think the question I'm going to ask is probably related to all of them. I'd like to get both of your opinions on it. What do you think is the bare minimum someone needs to do if they decide the bare minimum they need to possess before they get into ethical hacking? And I'm not talking about professional qualifications and A levels and GCSEs and O grades and whatever. I'm actually talking about the skill set that that individual needs, be it, you know, being a motivated individual or be it able to assimilate information. What do you think you need to have yourself before you decide that you should go for a career in ethical hacking or penetration testing? For me, I think that the minimum someone needs to have is the ability to get themselves motivated to learn. You know, that's for me the big requirement. And then on top of that, I think that there needs to be a commitment and an understanding that regardless that you don't know it all and that you'll have a lifetime of learning just to not be treading water, basically, you know, to be making a step forward. What do you think, Tom, what do you think the bare minimum a person should have for getting into ethical hacking?
I definitely agree with motivation, but I think one of the biggest things that somebody really needs to like know and understand is that, like you said, that they need that it is a lifetime of learning. It isn't just you learn it once and then that's it and then bust it. There's, you know, the news, the new exploits coming out, you know, something different happens every day. You know, some new technology arrives or some new technology is exploited. I reckon to be a good ethical hacker, to get into the industry, you need to be interested, definitely interested in what's happening in the world.
Okay, and Chris, what do you think?
No, I mean I agree with Tom. I mean this is a lifetime of learning. I mean this is why I moved into security in the first place, is because I don't like to learn one thing and then just use that for the next 5 years. I wanna be learning something new every day, and security really offers that. But it's kind of a double-edged sword. It's really nice if you can keep up with it all, but you can't. And that's one thing, as a security professional, quite a lot of people have to learn, and I mean, I still have to learn it as well, is at some point, you can't keep up with it all. You know, you can't keep
like
up with every
cats.
Single thing. Exactly.
It's
like, if every time I think I'm catching up with it all, a whole load of new stuff comes out, and you just can't do it all. And at some point, you just have to let it go and say, look, you know, I can't do everything there. I'm just going to do what I can. But I think one thing that people who do ethical hacking, and particularly penetration testing, quite a lot of people overlook this, is you really need to be able to take in information and understand things very, very quickly. And the reason for that is because in your typical penetration test, you go to a client site, they give you a diagram of how their network looks like, which is probably outdated. And information about what all these systems do, and you, in the best case, you know, they've given you maybe there's 20 servers on the network, and you go and test these systems, and they're all individual, and they all do one thing, and you're like, okay, that's pretty easy, not a problem. I can test your mail server because all it does is do mail, and I can test your intranet because all it does is have one application on it. But on the flip side is you go and test a large organization, a large corporate, a bank. They give you a very, very detailed visio diagram and say, you know, this is our SAN structure, this is how our fiber channel fits together, and you have to be able to sit there and within a half an hour kickoff meeting with someone, fully understand exactly how that entire infrastructure works. And that's a very, very hard thing to do, you know, especially if you've, you know, and I hate to harp on people who've come out of university, and I'm really sorry, Tom, but if you come out of university and the only thing you've done is learn at university, the first time someone in a large corporate dumps a A3 piece of paper on your desk with this huge, great big SAN NAS environment using virtualized systems on blade frames with, you know, 30 VLANs and, you know, 2, 3 fall over connections and an entire dark site at, across town at the other side of town is a dark site, and they basically say, how can you pen test that? You know, the look on some people's faces is, oh my God, this could take me a month to understand how this works. And you have to physically be able to take all that information in, process it, and come up with a realistic testing scenario within half an hour to an hour sometimes. And that's something that people really, you know, don't tend to think about very much, but I think it's a skill that people working in ethical hacking and penetration testing really need.
Well, if Chris hasn't scared you off from getting into ethical hacking, there's lots of different routes. Some of the qualifications that you could speak about there, that we spoke about there, they're all pretty easy to find, but they will be available in the show notes. Finally, university or professional qualifications, Tom? Which one?
Professional qualifications.
University or professional qualifications, Chris?
Yeah, as a person who didn't go to university, I'd actually say take your time and learn it yourself. Professional qualifications have their place, but I don't think the university route offers everything it should yet. I think it's getting there, but I don't think it's there yet. And I don't think professional qualifications are worth the price at the moment. I think, you know, spending a couple of months learning it yourself, you're going to learn more, and you're going to learn more about yourself, which is an important thing. You're going to learn how motivated you really are, because you're not sitting in a class. You have to get off your ass and do it yourself. I think that's the best way to go, at least to start with. But,
and for me,
it's not going to look good on your CV, is it?
For me, I think certainly in the UK, choosing a university is probably a good entry for getting in, if I'm honest with you. Just because of funding, and it's very hard to find businesses that will accept you and pay for your training if you have nothing to show them. So if there's no other better solution, but I also think as well that the solution should fit the need, and maybe a mixture of some time at university doing a couple of different things and doing professional qualifications might be a better route. If you're interested, speak to the university. I'm sure they'll answer any of your questions. That's all for this tech segment.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.